The two things that I never said tennis anyone, and I never said, okay, Louis, drop the gun.
Profile, Humphrey Bogart. Tonight from Hollywood, NBC pays a final tribute to Humphrey Bogart, movie star, Academy Award winner, husband, father, and character. Bogey, as he was affectionately called, was an intimate friend of many of the press, as well as the Hollywood greats. And tonight, NBC calls upon one of those friends of the press, well-known Hollywood commentator George Fisher, who brushed shoulders with Humphrey Bogart off and on for 20 years while reporting the Hollywood scene.
Thank you. And in all those years, I never knew if Bogey was kidding me or was really serious. But he was like that all the time. Only his real friends knew when he was kidding and when he was shooting from the shoulder. And Bogey was a character, a real character. Ask anyone who ever worked in a movie with him. They loved him. His sets were always the fun sets, a joy to work. He could concentrate fiercely, learn a script quickly, would always be on time, always helpful. Tomorrow at noon in Hollywood, Humphrey DeForest Bogart will be laid to rest. And not only Hollywood, but a world of moviegoers will mourn his passing. He has left a great many fans, a great many friends, and a family he loved. But tonight, we're not merely mourning Humphrey Bogart. We're thinking of the greatness he evolved out of a later lifetime of success as a movie star, of the fun he had, of the lift he gave to co-workers, of the character that was Humphrey Bogart, a bad man of the screen, a good man to have around the house. The kind of man who stopped between scenes on a movie set the morning after his second child, little Leslie, was born, to talk about it.
Yes, George.
How are you, sir?
I'm very fine, thank you.
You don't mind if I had a minute on the baby last night?
Well, no, dear, you go right ahead.
I hope I didn't interrupt the scene.
No, you just caught me at the right time.
Good. Congratulations, then, on the arrival of your new baby daughter, Leslie.
Well, thank you very much, George.
By the way, Bogey, would you have called the baby Leslie if it had been a boy?
No, we had another name. If it was going to be a boy, we were going to call it Peter Belmont. Belmont was my father's first name.
And Peter after anyone?
And Peter, just because we like the sound of it.
Ah, wonderful.
Peter Belmont.
Confidentially...
How can this be confidential, George?
Well, I agree. And how is baby? I mean, Lauren.
She's wonderful. She just wonderful. She went through it at about 3 hours. We went to the hospital at 9 o'clock, and the baby was born at 2 minutes past 12, which... I consider very, very considerate of Betty, you know, after dinner and before going to bed at night.
I think that's wonderful. By the way, do you have a little nursery fixed up already in the new home?
Oh, yes, yes. That's been ready for a month, and we've got Stephen all prepared for the arrival of the new baby. You have to be a little careful because their noses get a little out of joint for a while unless you're very careful.
What was his first reaction?
Well, I tell you what, I think he thinks that he doesn't realize how small she is, and he thinks she'll be right out in the garden playing with him the minute she gets home, you know?
That's difficult.
Yeah, because he said he was going to... I said, what are you going to do when your little sister comes home? And he said, well, we're going to climb trees, and I'll take her for a ride on my tricycle on the back.
You're going to have a ball.
Yeah, that's pretty lucky, I guess, to have one of each.
Oh, you're wonderful that way. Thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us. And again, congratulations and give our best to Lauren.
Thank you, George. And just in closing, I just wanted to add one little thing, that anybody that says women are the weaker sex is crazy after having seen what they go through to have a child, and the way they bounce back in the morning, it's just wonderful.
On the subject of fatherhood, Stephen is now nearly 8 and Leslie approaching 5. Bogey once declared... It came a little late in life. I don't understand the children, and I think they don't understand me. And all I can say is, thank goodness for Betty. You know, Bogart was a truly professional actor. He survived in a pretty rough business, and the greatest kick he got out of the motion picture business was the night he won the Oscar for the best performance by an actor for the movie African Queen in 1952. This reporter, at Bogey's request, was master of ceremonies the night of that great movie premiere, and I was also present when the star won the Oscar. He was never so nervous, up and down, out of his seat 100 times, waiting for that final decision. A decision Hollywood knows is also based on the popularity of the star with his fellow craftsmen. What was that part like? Well, certainly it was not the gangster role he was famed for, but rather a kind of riffraff captain of a shabby riverboat, the African Queen, a picture in which he really hit big time, co-starring with Katharine Hepburn. It was Bogey's fifth association with director John Huston, beginning with The Maltese Falcon. And the stories of the so-called feud between Bogey and Katie were far-reaching and apparently far-fetched. As he once told me at his home in Beverly Hills after making the film, when I asked him if it was a real feud.
No, there was never any friction between Katie and myself because I love Katie and I think Katie loves me. We got along splendidly. You see, I'm a natural-born griper. I just gripe at everything, and I'm kind of like a GI in the Army, you know. Gripe about the food, gripe about the conditions, but go ahead and do the work. Whereas Katie used to drive me crazy by, as you say, she loved everything. The natives were divine, the heat was divine, everything was divine with Katie. And I used to get kind of sore at her, but only in a mild way, because I thought she was nuts, which it turned out I think she is. She loved every minute of it. She would like to stay there for the next 6 years.
Did you certainly leered when you said you'd like to stay the next 6 years. Did your wife enjoy the trip, or was she on your side or Katie's side?
No. My wife was on Katie's side, and they were both on John Huston's side. As a matter of fact, I think he's slightly nuts, so I guess I was the only one who thought it was too hot and too damp and why we were there and the food was lousy, and so I just... I was kind of like that angry man in the box. I just drank my scotch and griped.
But Bogey seldom griped in Hollywood. His name pulled at the box office, and he was a fine actor. In the process of making some 70 movies, he acquired a brassy air of confidence and command. And though he wasn't a big man, he was able to transfer to the screen an illusion of size and toughness and unmistakable menace. And in these later years, he played a surprising variety of important roles. And even with the presence of Katharine Hepburn in African Queen, Bogart brought an aura of distinction to the movie. Let's go back to that picture and his Oscar-winning performance, as Bogey and Katie, who were actually feuding in the story, steamed downriver on the African Queen with all the physical hazards as well as the hazards of themselves.
Ah, it's a great thing to have a lady aboard with clean habits. Sets a man a good example. Man alone, he gets to living like a hog. Then, too, with me, it's always put things off. Never do today what you can put off till tomorrow. But with you, business before pleasure, every time. Do all your personal laundry. Make yourself spick and span. Get all the mending out of the way. And then, and only then, sit down for a nice, quiet hour with a good book. I tell you, it's a model, like an inspiration. Well, I ain't had this old engine so clean in years, inside and out. Just look at her, miss. See how she practically sparkles. Myself, too. Guess you ain't never had a look at me without my whiskers and all cleaned up. I bet you wouldn't hardly recognize me. Works that much of a change. Dressed you up, too. I only had some clean clothes like you. Now you, why, you could be at high tea. Say, that's an idea, miss. How's about a nice little cup of tea? Now don't you stir. I'll be glad to make it for you. How's the book, miss? Well, not that I ain't read it. That is to say, my poor old mum used to read me stories out of it. How's about reading it out loud? I could sure do with a little spiritual comfort myself. And you call yourself a Christian. Do you hear me? Don't you? Don't you? Huh? Miss, have a heart. Fair's fair. You've got to say something. I don't care what it is, but you got to say something. I'll be honest with you, miss. I just can't stand no more of this. I just ain't used to it, that's all.
So you think it was your nasty drunkenness I minded?
Well, what else?
You promised you'd go down the river.
Miss, listen to me and try to understand. There's death a dozen times over down the river. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but don't blame me. Blame the Yolanga.
You promised.
Well, I'm taking my promise back. All right, miss. You win. As the crocodiles will be glad to hear. Down the river we go.
That scene from African Queen, a memorable milestone in Humphrey Bogart's career. For each of his movies, he received $200,000 and occasionally was his own high-paid employee when working for Santana, his own movie-producing company. Bogey's eminently happy marriage to Lauren Bacall prompted them to think about making more pictures together. And one afternoon at their home in Benedict Canyon, I asked him if he thought it would be harmful to their separate careers to work together.
Oh, I can't think why it would be harmful. I think it would be a great help. I'd like to do it very much. We're looking for stories all the time. We've made a couple together, three together, as you know, and we're still married and expect to be for some time. As a matter of fact, I've purchased a book, which we might do in association with John Huston toward the end of this year, do it abroad. Its setting is in France and Spain.
Another romantic adventure?
Rather, kind of like a little on the order of the Maltese Falcon, oh, this one.
Wonderful.
Which would be nice.
I should think so.
No, I don't think that married people's working together, I think it's better for them than not to work together.
Working with the top actors and actresses was a pleasant enough pastime for Bogey, and he worked with them all. And as far back as 1942, when Rudy Vallee was Mr. Radio, Bogey joined Rudy, Joan Davis, and an actor he greatly admired, John Barrymore, in this comedy sketch.
All right, you two. Put him up. Reach for the ceiling.
What is this?
Quiet, Curly. Get your arms up. Get your arms up, and you too, sister.
Sure, I'll put my arms up.
Not around his neck. Miss Davis, be careful. This man is a thug.
Oh, I'd like to thug him and squeeze him.
Hey, sister, you ain't a bad-looking mole.
You mean mole.
I mean mole.
Gosh, mister, you really are tough. You know, I never saw an outside gangster before.
Now, what do you mean outside?
Outside of my uncle and two brothers.
All right, enough of this gab. Where's the money, Curly?
Rudy?
Pipe down, bud.
Who's this, another customer?
I'm Bogart the bad man. This is a stick-up.
A hold-up? I'd better phone the police. And tell them I want two tickets for the policeman's benefit.
Come on, Barrymore. Open a safe or I'll plug you.
Oh, you can't scare me. I can look you straight in the face and not flinch.
So what? I can look you straight in the face and not... Oh, you got me, pal. I can't do it.
When Bogey made Petrified Forest with Leslie Howard and Betty Davis, it firmly established him as the number one movie gangster. And Bogey and Leslie Howard became close friends. His baby daughter Leslie is named after the actor. His star was on the rise, and so is his practical joking. And his willingness to speak on any subject never really got him into any trouble. Once when I told him that his chum Earl Flynn had named Hollywood's 10 characters and included him out, he responded with his own list of characters.
I think we ought to start off with my good friend Catherine Hepburn, who seems to top my list as I think it out quickly. She's a wonderful character. A man I only met once, John Barrymore, for whom I had the profoundest admiration. W.C. Fields, I would say, whom you all knew. I used to play golf with him. He was a wonderful character. Wilson Meisner, whom I met only once, but that one meeting was enough. He was the writer, as you know, probably one of the best known in the country. John Huston, who is most definitely a character. He is a very fine director of a great many very wonderful pictures. John Decker, the painter. John Decker happened to be also a great friend of John Barrymore's. I think you knew John Decker, George.
Yes.
Charlie Butterworth, the actor, who was a good friend of mine. Mark Hellinger, who was most definitely a character. Mark was a wonderful friend of all of us and a very fine man. But he was an individual. If you remember, he used to wear blue shirts and white ties, and I think he used to play at being a gangster once in a while. It was all part of his little acting business. He's a wonderful character. Greta Garbo, I would say, was a character. She certainly departed from the beaten track, and she did as she pleased. And last but not least, my good friend Mike Romanoff is most definitely a character.
And Mike Romanoff permitted Bogey to appear at his exclusive restaurant without a necktie. Bogey and Betty had numerous and spirited differences of opinion. Betty refused to put foot on his $55,000 yacht, and Bogey refused to light her cigarettes, although he went halfway and presented her with a lighter. And despite the 25-year difference in their ages, each reflected pride, affection, and great respect for the other, for he was a devoted husband. And Humphrey Bogart wasn't one to go out to big, sumptuous Hollywood affairs, but he did make a few movie premieres, mostly his own, or those which starred his wife, Lauren Bacall. I emceed many of them, and I recall one he attended a few years ago, How to Marry a Millionaire, which starred Marilyn Monroe, Lauren Bacall, and Betty Grable. And Bogey and Betty attended with Marilyn Monroe and producer Nunnally Johnson.
Here comes Humphrey Bogart over to our microphone while his lovely wife is getting all the attention that is due her at her own premiere. Because Lauren Bacall goes through this sort of thing when her husband's pictures are premiered, which, as a matter of fact, was not so long ago when they made African Queen. She stood by while he took all the plaudits.
Good evening, George Fisher. I'm extremely proud and pleased to be here, and extremely proud to see that Nunnally Johnson has finally been photographed. He was complaining on the way down that nobody ever took a picture of him, and I said that if he would get in between Miss Lauren Bacall and Miss Marilyn Monroe, he couldn't miss.
You're so right.
George, thank you, and I think I should leave now, huh?
I think it's wonderful that you came over to tell us that cute story, and I think that I saw the picture yesterday, and I can only say that Lauren Bacall is just great in this picture.
I'm very pleased to hear that. I've heard it before, and I hope it's a tremendous success.
Thank you very much, Uncle Bill. Bye-bye.
From the very moment Stanley Kramer read The Kane Mutiny, he, like so many others, decided instantly on Bogey for Captain Queeg. At 18, Bogey joined the Navy in World War I and served on the Leviathan. And in 1954, he was in the Navy again, this time commanding the Kane in the movie. It was expected that this would be his greatest role. That the movie failed somewhere did not lessen the fact that as Queeg, Bogart was likely to achieve a measure of secondhand immortality. Will you ever forget that memorable scene on the Kane in the tremendous gale which precipitated Merrick, played by Van Johnson, taking over the command, which Queeg called mutiny?
Captain, this following sea is brutal. We need more knots to outrun it.
Race to engine control. This is the captain speaking. You down there in the engine room, I want power. Power on the starboard engine, do you hear? Emergency flank power. You want the ship to go down, we're in a typhoon.
Sir, I've relieved the watch. Pass the word to put on life jackets.
It's difficult holding her, sir. The wheel feels loose.
Captain, I don't know whether we can keep on riding with our stern to the wind.
Those are fleet orders, Mr. Merrick.
I still think the depth charges should be put on safe.
Sir, the depth charges are on safe. Mr. Kiefer gave me orders to set them.
Why wasn't I told these things? I can't go steaming around with a lot of dead charges.
Sir, I told Mr. Keefe.
You speak when you're spoken to. Mr. Keefe, put this man on the board for insolence and neglect of duty. Man, get another helmsman. Keep that idiot's face out of my sight.
But Stillwell's our best man, sir.
Will you stop this back talk? Isn't there one officer on this ship that pays attention to my orders?
Humphrey Bogart was a liberal Democrat, an avid reader, and a man who never drank when he worked, but on an occasion loved to stay up till dawn. Hollywood often speculated on what kind of fellow he really was. For one, he was a man who could say he didn't trust anyone if he didn't drink. In fact, on that subject, his wonderful sense of humor goes a step further.
I'll tell you, I drink scotch. I drink it not only at home, but I drink it as anybody else does, before lunch, before dinner. Have one for the road, and so on and so on and so forth, just like anybody else does. Yes, I like scotch very much. As a matter of fact, it saved my life in Africa, old boy.
You mean keeping away from the fleas, the insects?
Oh, yes. Well, they kept away from me.
Tell me, do you like the reputation of being a character bogey?
Well, yes, I think it's good. I wouldn't like to be like everybody else. I don't think I'd go out of my way to be a character.
Well, maybe I just am.
I don't believe in doing things just to get publicity. I believe in doing what you feel like doing taking the consequences of whatever comes out of it.
You see what I mean? Bogey once told a Time magazine writer buddy, "I have politeness and manners. I was brought up that way. But in this goldfish bowl life, it is sometimes hard to use them. A nightclub is a good place not to have manners." And Bogey was publicity conscious, too.
Oh, yes. Well, I kind of like publicity. I think if I hadn't been an actor, I might have been a publicity man or an advertising man. And it amuses me sometimes to confuse people, especially people here, you know, in the business, as to what I do with my private life and then my life, shall we say, in the newspapers.
Yes.
I feel somewhat the way Miss Katharine Hepburn feels about that. She says she doesn't care what anybody prints as long as it isn't true.
We'll ever forget his wonderful romancing of Audrey Hepburn and Sabrina with William Holden. An all-time favorite of his fans, Sabrina screamed for Bogart. And one of the highlights of that picture was this scene with William Holden on the subject of love and marriage.
It's all beginning to make sense. Mr. Tyson owns the sugar cane. You own the formula for the plastics. And I'm supposed to be offered up as a human sacrifice on the altar of industrial progress. Is that it?
You make it sound so vulgar, David, as if the son of the hot dog dynasty were being offered in marriage to the daughter of the mustard king. Surely you don't object to Elizabeth just because her father happens to have $20 million. That's very narrow-minded of you, David.
Just one thing you overlooked. I haven't proposed, and she hasn't accepted.
Oh, don't worry. I proposed, and Mr. Tyson accepted. Did you kiss him? Now, look, David, Elizabeth is one of the loveliest girls around. Sooner or later, you're going to propose to her anyway. I'm only trying to help you make up your mind.
Then why don't you marry her?
Me?
Well, what's so funny? You want to die an old maid?
Well, I was just thinking that if I were ever to get married, I'd have to take a dictaphone, two secretaries, and four corporation counselors along on the honeymoon. I'd be unfaithful to my wife every night of my married life, with vice presidents, boards of directors, slide rule accountants. This is my home. No wife would ever understand it.
Well, neither can I. You've got all the money in the world.
But what's money got to do with it? If making money were all there was to business, it'd hardly be worthwhile going to the office. Money is a byproduct.
Well, what's the main objective? Power?
Ah, that's become a dirty word.
Well, then what's the urge? You're going into plastics now. What will that prove?
Prove? Nothing much. A new product has been found, something of use to the world. So a new industry moves into an undeveloped area. Factories go up, machines are brought in, a harbor is dug, and you're in business. It's purely coincidental, of course, that people who never saw a dime before suddenly have a dollar. And barefooted kids wear shoes and have their teeth fixed and their faces washed. What's wrong with the kind of an urge that gives people libraries, hospitals, baseball diamonds, and movies on a Saturday night? Miss Ricardo, will you send in the secretary?
Yes, Mr. Larrabee.
Profile Humphrey Bogart. Some final words from this wonderful guy. Words that may never again be uttered in just the same way. For with Bogey's passing, a part of Hollywood's colorful history has left too. Tomorrow, John Huston, who perhaps knew Humphrey Bogart better than most, will deliver the eulogy at the services. And tonight, John Huston pays a personal tribute.
The first picture I made with Humphrey Bogart was back some years before the war. It was the Maltese Falcon. I'd written a couple of pictures for Bogart before that, but only then, while we were making the Falcon, did I get to know him really well. After the Falcon, we did another picture across the Pacific, and then the war came and I went away. I remember meeting Bogey in Italy during the war. He was over with an entertainment group. There was a festive occasion when I met him at the palace at Caserta. Of course, I have memories of Bogey that are evoked when any one of the of the six pictures I made with him are mentioned. There was also Key Largo and Treasure of the Sierra Madre and African Queen and Beat the Devil. Those pictures carried us, I guess, around the world a couple of times. I had hoped to make six more pictures with Bogart, at least. The next one was to be in Afghanistan. And only the other day, Bogey said, "John, we've got to start thinking about this one now. Get it underway." He was planning to make it the very week of his death. When you live and work with a man, you get to know him pretty well. When I say living as closely as I did with Bogey, you get to know a man well. I mean just that, and the better I got to know him, the more I admired him. He was a very serious man about his work. He took great pride in being an actor. The side, the face that he presented to the world was quite a different one than those who knew him truly well knew. In society, at Hollywood parties, why, he assumed the role of gadfly and tormentor of the fat cats. This gave a misunderstanding to occur on the parts of those who only knew him slightly, who only saw him on those occasions. They thought of him as rowdy, bawdy, and gaudy. In truth, he was a very sincere, a deeply humble man, a very faithful man, faithful to his work, his friends, and finally, lastly, his family. He was a devoted father, and he loved his wife most dearly. It's a loss to the world, of course, that great talent, but the world can refer to it in the pictures that remain behind, those that he had done. The loss to his family and to his friends is therefore all the greater. There'll never be another Bogart.
This is the NBC Radio Network.